Good morning. It is Monday. It's a new month. It's February and we have things to do, people to see, places to go. It's going to be a busy Monday morning show. I've got to tell you, we have guests. We have our live-in shrink, Dr. Hanan. We've got Leanne, who's not here yet, but she'll come walking in doing the walk of shame in just a moment or two. And I have, most importantly, have you here. Otherwise, why the hell would we bother doing this show, right? James and Flex producing, and you can drop us a comment if you're watching us live on YouTube this morning, and then you can be part of the conversation too. Wow, there's so much going on. The big news of the morning, Orange Man, Donald John Trump, says the following. You see, it was only a matter of time before he would eventually turn his attention to us. It's like the eye of Sauron, right? You know, it like surveys the land, and then suddenly it lands somewhere. Now, whether you think that's good or bad, that's up to you. But look at this. He says, South Africa is confiscating land and treating certain classes of people very badly. It is a bad situation that the radical left media doesn't want to so much as mention. A massive human rights violation at a minimum is happening for all to see. The United States won't stand for it. We will act. Also, we will be cutting off all future funding to South Africa until a full investigation of this situation has been completed. So what this means is that clearly someone in Trump's circle have pointed out to him that South Africa actually has quite a lot of race-based laws. And we actually do. And it's something South Africans don't even talk about that much. And he doesn't like that. He says, you can't have laws that are against certain groups of people and for others, because this is a guy who has spent the last 4 years fighting for his survival, fighting for his freedom, fighting for his ability to be a citizen, let alone a presidential candidate, because the entire engine of state justice has been brought to bear against him. So he's got an axe to grind. And he doesn't like the idea that there are laws that would discriminate, you know, this group of people will apply those laws, that group of people will apply that law. So what are we actually talking about here? Well, we're going to speak to Colonel Chris Wyatt, who is in America at the moment, and we've had him on the show a couple of times before, and he's been all over this on social media. Also, there's talk of tariffs. I don't know if you noticed over the weekend. I want to save some of this for the latter part of the show as well. We'll get to it with Rob Hersov, who's also going to be our guest. It's going to be a busy morning. But there are tariffs that have been brought to bear on Canada and Mexico. Those were initiated last week. Canada has retaliated by saying, you know, Kendall, Justin Trudeau, got up in front of everybody and said, well, if you're going to make laws against us, then we're going to make laws against you. And we're going to put a 25% tariff on all American goods. And, you know, Trump just sat in his office and went, bring it on, little bitch. I'm ready for you, because that's what he's, you know, that's what he's like. So we're going to see what happens there. It's going to be a very bumpy ride. The next couple of years, I hope you got some tea or coffee this morning. There's going to be a lot of excitement. There's going to be a lot going on. Not all of it will be stuff you like. I'm just warning you. Oh, there she comes. Walk of shame. Hello, Leanne.
Hello. Hi. Oh, did you notice me coming in?
Hi.
I thought I went in all stealthily.
No, at least you got the black memo, though.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, very important. Black memo. You know, we all arrived at the office the other day. Everybody at The Real Network was wearing white.
Oh, that's an unusual color today.
I know, and it was on a Monday. It was, I think it was last Monday, or was it the week before? And everybody was wearing white. No messages, no memo actually went out or anything. It's just bizarre. Everybody was wearing white. And then the next, 2 days later, we were all wearing a different color. Everybody.
Yeah, it's like your periods are starting to sink.
I think so. Something's starting to happen. Anyway, we were talking a little bit about Trump when you came in, because there's a lot going on in America at the moment, and there's a lot going on in South Africa at the moment. Mm. We also have to, at some point, do a catch-up on Rwanda.
Yeah, it's all happening.
It's all happening. It's certainly not a boring start to the year. And it's only February.
Thank goodness it's February finally, after 4 months of January.
Mm-hmm. It did feel like the longest month in history, right?
Yeah.
I wonder what it was, because I was at an event on Friday. It was the only thing I did this weekend. I absolutely did. You know, I often say I did nothing, but then I might have done a couple of things that were, you know, kind of chilled. But this weekend, I honestly did bugger all. I did some work. I woke up pretty early. I went to gym, but I did nothing social. It was so good.
Mm.
It was so good because I just couldn't get myself to see a whole bunch of people. But I did go out on Friday night because I had this client event that I wanted to go to. And everybody there was saying, good Lord, this January's been long. And I said, yeah, that's why I'm going to be here for a short time. I'm out of here by 8, which I was.
Yeah.
I'm getting so boring, Leanne.
I used to
do things.
I spent the whole weekend in bed because I have bronchitis.
I've got bronchitis. So funny, my dad got sick the other day and then my mom got sick. So they've also been, so I said to them, I'll see you when I see you.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. But people are, they're getting sick and it's summer. And then there was rain last night, which was weird too. So now we've covered all the boring stuff. Illness, weather.
Mm. No social life.
The calendar and no social life. No. So we've done all of the things. Unbelievable. All right. So there are a lot of interesting things going on, as I said, in America at the moment. But there's also stuff going on here. So where do you want to start? Let's take a look at what's going on. You know, it's our job to inform people, right?
Yeah.
On a Monday morning, what else do you
know? We have to inform ourselves of everything, which means we know a little bit about everything,
right.
But okay. Nothing about anything really.
Okay. So let's start with this. Johannesburg's infrastructure, this is a surprise, surprise, in case you didn't know, is in crisis.
Surprise,
surprise. 78% of our bridges in Johannesburg are in poor condition or in very poor condition.
Well, there are a lot of times the steel bars are taken out the sides.
Yep. But of course, the people who are going to recycle the steel, they don't care about public infrastructure because they think, that belongs to other people.
Or the government will just put more there that I can take.
Yeah, they'll just put more there. Yeah. So this is what's happened. Apparently, we need 16 billion rand for repairs. The city's water system is also facing chronic shortages due to leaks and outdated pipes, losing nearly 40% of our water that just gets lost. Roads are plagued with potholes. Well, we know about that. And they require 81.5 billion rand in maintenance. This seems like a lot of money. I think to build those roads originally when there were no roads cost us a whole lot less. And there was a lot less material. Supply chains were much shittier, and people just worked harder. Like now, find people who are willing to work on the roads. They're going to be like, I would much rather be a lawyer. You know, I don't know who we're going to find to build these things. Anyway, the mayor, in case you've forgotten, his name is Dada Morero. At least he's not the Nyaupe mayor.
Yes.
Right. He says, there's decline. And okay, so I don't want to start our Monday on a horrible note, but yes, there's decline. I have not seen any, you know, when you drive down the road and you're like, wow, this is a pretty road. The grass is cut. The road itself is in good condition. The curb stones aren't broken and sticking out into the road. There aren't like weeds growing everywhere.
Mm.
This is a great road. I haven't seen that road. Wherever it may be, for like the last 4 or 5 years, it just feels like Johannesburg compared to, say, Cape Town. I know this really grates the ANC,
even Pretoria,
but it's true.
Even, no, not Pretoria, Mpumalanga.
Pretoria is a disaster.
Sorry, Mpumalanga onwards. Looks really, really good.
Well, we've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
Because Johannesburg feels like it's falling apart. Anyway, so, he says, I acknowledge this, but efforts are underway to restore stability. Through financial troubles and underfunding, which are hindering the process, but we will try to recover on all of those vectors. Yeah, sure. I mean, like, just how about we just tidy up? Because that would be a great start. If you live in your own filth, you cannot expect anyone to treat you with dignity. Like, this is an ugly reality that I do wish I didn't have to say, but it needs saying.
Mm-hmm.
You need to tidy up your house if you want people who are visiting you to have some respect for you.
Yeah.
If you live in filth and litter and ordure, then you are going to be treated like a pig who lives in filth and dirt and litter and ordure. So I think we've got a city in Johannesburg, which it makes me embarrassed to be living in. I am disgusted at the state of our city. I'm humiliated when people I know from anywhere in the world, and even people I know from the rest of this country, come here to Johannesburg to do business, to visit, to be with friends and family, to come and check the place out for the first time. And you have to acknowledge, whether you like it or not, that when they see the state of the place, they're a little disappointed. Even if people like me are going around, and we had interviews last year with people who are writing books about Joburg and, you know, telling stories about Joburg and their podcasts and their documentaries that are being done. And,
yeah,
you know, we've had some of these people in the studio, and some of them are doing their best to put Joburg's best foot forward. But our best foot in Johannesburg is a club foot at the moment. It's horrible. Okay. We really are a city that is in complete decline. And this government, and particularly this municipality, the government that runs the city of Johannesburg, has done absolutely nothing to make me feel better about it. Nothing.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing that's happening that's good is the stuff that private enterprise
exactly.
is doing. Or when individuals go to the trouble of making sure that their own garden verge on the edge of the road is looked after.
Mm-hmm.
And that's people spending their own money to make their own little area of some neighborhood a little bit better. You know, people live in estates or they boom off certain areas and everybody's like, oh, it's so unfair. You're trying to make this elite. The fact is, the only way any parts of Johannesburg will still be habitable and people will still want to live in those places is if the people who already live in those places look after them.
Yeah.
It's not going to be the city government, the municipality. They're not going to do a goddamn thing. They don't. Everywhere you look, it just looks like a shithole. So when Trump says, oh, you're a shithole country, because that's how we started the show this morning, that's what he said about eight years ago. Don't get upset, because if you look around, we kind of are. You know, look in the mirror, and if someone's insult hurts you, it's probably because it's true. And in Johannesburg, we've got a lot of fucking cleaning up to do.
So Pothole Patrol,
oh,
I noticed
boy. Here
over
we go.
The weekend,
all right,
which is a private enterprise, works with Discovery. You know how many potholes they've filled since inception?
How many?
258,000.
And how many of those were filled by the government? Zero.
No, these were all, yes, yeah. Well, exactly. They were all,
yeah,
all
right. So, but you know, here's the problem, right? And this is something that came up years ago. If private enterprise steps in and starts doing the things that government's meant to do, then why have a government? So why pay taxes?
Because, and what is the government going to do with the funds that they were meant to use for
Well,
that?
We know, all right. So the mayor of Johannesburg is out there saying we need 81.5 billion rand to maintain our roads. We need 16 billion rand to repair bridges. Well, I pay my rates and taxes, apart from my actual taxes, every month. And what have I got for that?
Yep.
What has anybody in the city of Johannesburg got for that? So where is it going? You pay separately for water, electricity,
mm-hmm.
rubbish removal, right? So where's it going? And I think when you start a new year, you look at what you're spending money on and you go, I think, you know, maybe I should cancel this, because even though it's nice to get the subscription to that thing or whatever it might be, I can't really afford it. So you take it off your list. Maybe you cancel a membership somewhere, or you stop paying for some kind of thing that you really enjoy, because you look at it and you go, I can't afford this. And then you look at how much you're paying in rates and taxes and you're like, I should cancel that, because I'm getting no value for it.
Yeah, I still have to drive over the same potholed road
right.
every day.
So when great business Discovery, I think that they're an amazing business. They do tremendous work. They are A lot of people don't like them because of the way they do or don't pay them out on an individual basis in some claim. I'll tell you what, I think that they're a professional operation. Mm. You may have your own personal disagreements with them, but that is an case-by-case basis. I think it's hard to run a business like that in South Africa, and power to anyone who can. Plus, they are seemingly very good at what they do, or they wouldn't still be around and be generating the money that they are.
Yeah.
Okay, so good for them that they're also fixing potholes for all those people who complain about them all the time. They are making the city better. But the problem is, once they take that responsibility on, government just goes, oh, okay.
It's like doing something for your child.
You become a helicopter parent.
When you do their homework, or if they come with chores and you end up doing them for them, they're just going to spend their energy elsewhere, playing or doing something that they shouldn't be doing. But yeah, that also brings me to this convention that I saw in Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a clip that I've got on it as well, speaking of potholes.
Okay. Because they're finding really cool ways to fix these things.
This has been called the world's easiest way to install pothole patches.
Okay.
And it was at a trade show in Vegas. And there are these like big tea bags, enormous tea bags filled with what you would normally use. Yeah, those are them.
And then what do they do?
Inside is cold patch asphalt.
Mm-hmm.
And that hardens just like normal asphalt. So those flexible tea bags, you're able to just purchase yourself and fix your own potholes if you really want to. No tools required.
Wow.
No, nothing. You just need a few of those bags. You put fill them into the cracks, lay them over each other. You don't even need to be precise. And what happens is, as nature takes its course, so say rain, and then the pressure of the cars driving over it, it slowly forms and melts and shapes into the potholes. Look at that. Completely sealed.
Wow, Leanne, look at this. You should pass this on to Dada Morero.
Absolutely. I thought it was amazing. And then you get different sized ones as well. So these ones are kind of smaller. So if you have one of those ones that have just started, that could go in there. The only thing is, because it takes a while for them to become hardened, I guess once you've laid your tea bags, you might have to camp on the side of the road and wait until they're squashed.
That's okay.
Because someone's going to take them.
When I see city municipal workers, they usually are just sitting around waiting anyway. I don't see them doing anything.
Waiting for the tar to dry.
I see them driving in a lot of like City of Joburg cars and spending more of our money on petrol, often eating in the cars. But I certainly don't see them working. Yeah,
sleeping on the grass.
Yeah, having a doo-doos on the side of the road. Nice. So, okay. I know this is a rabbit hole down which we can keep going forever. And I don't want us to sit and moan. I do want to talk to Colonel Chris Wyatt, who we've had on the show too. Is he there? Okay, brilliant. Hey, Chris, how the hell are you?
Well, Gareth, they're eating the dogs, they're eating the cats, they're eating the pets of the people in Springfield. Listen, warned South Africa and the politicians there for years that this was coming down the pike.
Mm.
I'm surprised it didn't happen the first administration. So many people worked against Trump.
All right, let's give everybody the context first, because even Leanne arrived late to this party. So let's just let everybody know what's going on. So Trump tweets out, and it was only a matter of time before the Eye of Sauron ended up landing on us, right? This is what he had to say this morning. He goes, South Africa is confiscating land and treating certain classes of people very badly. It is a bad situation, and the radical left media doesn't want to give it so much as a mention. A massive human rights violation at a minimum is happening for all to see. The United States won't stand for it. We will act. Also, I will be cutting off all future funding to South Africa until a full investigation of this situation has been completed. So what's he talking about?
Yeah.
Well, very simple to answer your question. People have to understand there's a whole lot of confusion about what was going on recently with the aid freeze, foreign assistance, and there were exemptions for that. So here's the thing. The assistance that's approved for foreign aid is in the budget or continuing resolution. It's approved by law. The president signs it. So the money that's currently coming to South African NGOs to pay for HIV and for other things like that is coming under law. So Trump, unless he has a legitimate reason, can't suspend that. He can freeze it, but he can't suspend it. And so what he's saying, in my view, is that the money that's allocated for this year will continue for the rest of this fiscal year, which runs through 30 September. However, he gave a warning there, and he spoke at Andrews Air Force Base later in the evening when he landed there, and or he's taken off from there. He said that he will be taking other action, basically. So I can tell you tomorrow, wake up South Africa, watch the Rand tank below 20-1. And after that happens, get ready for AGOA access to be suspended and then potentially tariffs to be placed on South Africa if South Africa doesn't take action. So it's not going to get pretty from here on out. And look, I'm not here all doom and gloom, Gareth. There's a solution for South Africans. I can tell you I can fix this. And you've got to flood your politicians and your civil organizations. I'll get to that in a moment. But it's not all doom and gloom, but it's not good news for South Africa at all.
No, all right. So let's look at what's going to happen here, because we know that the first thing that's going to happen is the ANC going to do what they're very good at and go into victim mentality and go, it's very unfair. Why is he being mean to us? Right?
No, that is
what's
racism.
Going to happen.
Racism!
Yeah, there'll be that. I mean, even though he hasn't done this to Kenya or Algeria or Uganda or anyone else, he's specifically targeting South Africa because he believes that there are things going on here that are not okay, like race-based discrimination in affirmative action, BEE, that kind of thing, which South Africans have become so completely mesmerized by that we've forgotten that this is not how people should behave, where we shouldn't be drafting laws against or for specific racial groups. It's just wrong. You can try to defend it any way you like. And in South Africa, most of us go, I don't think B and affirmative action are a problem, even though for 30 years, all we've seen them do is make an elite group of people in the ANC rich. It takes a while to get through all that noise in people's heads that's been created mostly by our own media when they were once powerful, before people could think for themselves. And now to get them to think, oh, okay, actually we should be in a place 30 years after 1994 where we don't have laws that specifically target a race group to not get jobs, to not have access to certain things, which is what our laws do. We have more race-based laws now than we had prior to 1994, which is a horrible thing for most people to come to terms with, but it's the truth. And you can go and look it up. You can find all the sources that are available publicly. This is not a controversial thing. Most South Africans just don't want to hear it. They don't want to talk about it. It feels like it's too controversial. Our own DA in this country, who you know well, Chris, they're like, well, we're not entirely against BEE or affirmative action. We think it's important that those things are there because they're too scared to say that they don't agree with race-based laws.
100%. And in fact, this is a human rights violation of epic proportions. South Africa has signed the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and they must adhere to that, and they're not adhering to it. Also, their constitution, which was promulgated under a majority black rule government in 1996, calls for non-racialism in the treatment of South Africans. And in fact, broad-based black economic empowerment is anything but not race-based. It's very much based on that. And it's selecting government tenders only for companies that are majority black-owned is also a serious concern. But this situation here has been building for years.
Let's just also throw this in. Sorry, Chris, to interrupt you. Let's just throw in the fact that in the last year, three particular laws have come into play, which I think have also aggravated people in America who have a direct line to Trump, which may or may not be a good thing. Who knows? I mean, the left-wing media in this country are going to say it's a terrible thing. But there are probably people in this country who will go, oh, my God, finally someone is hearing the voices of so many people in this country who have just been ignored for the longest time. Right. So the first one's the Bella law, this education law, which is blatantly discriminatory and is cloaked under the guise of being something that's about kind of making education in the country more equitable, more accessible, more free. It's all of that stuff. We know what it really is. It's going up against Afrikaans medium institutions that are trying to teach people in their home language. And frankly, also Zulu and Xhosa and Sotho and other institutions that are going to be sidelined. Also, it's going to help a lot of illegal immigrants into South Africa's education system for free and disadvantage lots of legal South Africans, citizens. So there's a big problem with the Bella Act, and I'm really just scratching the surface on that one. The second thing is the expropriation bill, which was turned into an act just the other day by our president, which allows the government to seize any property without having to give any compensation to anybody. They can set the compensation at zero. And that is a flouting of all the laws around property, which are age old and which any civilized and decent country in the world knows it has to abide by. Otherwise, they do not have an economy to speak of. If you can't prove that you have ownership of the coffee mug, you can't sell the coffee mug, you can't buy more coffee mugs, you don't know how much your coffee mug is worth. Therefore, there's no reason for you to interact economically with anyone else. And the third one is obviously the, what's the other one? The
National Health Insurance.
National Health Insurance. Thank you very much. Which is, of course, about kind of, Panyaza Lesufi made a big fuss of this over the weekend. He said, oh, the NHI is about making healthcare accessible to more South Africans. No, it's not. It's about looting the medical aids, the one place that they haven't got their filthy, dirty, thieving hands on yet. Isn't that what it is?
Well, there's actually, it's about that, but it's also about looting. Well, that's for the medical aid, but the expropriation is about, a lot of people get wrapped around the axle about land. It definitely is land, but property explicitly spelled out in Section 25 of South Africa's constitution says property is not just land. Anything. It's all property. It's stocks, it's bonds, it's pension funds. So you talk about NHI going after the health schemes. Yes, I agree. But expropriation without compensation is about going after retirement funds. You're going to just take 10% and go, oh, we need this. And they're going to need it to, so that we can balance the scale. It's none of that. But you left one thing off, Gareth, which is being talked about. It's not law yet, but it was proposed by Parks Tau, a 3% corporate tax after profit on businesses to fund exclusively Black-owned businesses. So what the South African government is telling you is that businesses, Black and white in South Africa, whoever owns them, and those who own the shares from abroad on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange or American Depository Receipts, you have to pay 3% of your corporate profit to fund companies owned by people based on their skin pigmentation. Yeah. And oh, by the way, they're probably your competitors and they have a leg up on you in getting contracts with the government because they meet the standards. This is sick. And it flies in the face of all international norms. This is a rogue regime that needs to be brought to heel.
All right. So what does that mean for South Africa? You said the Rand's going to tank. Obviously, investors will get very, very frightened. Let's just talk also about USAID, USAID, because a lot of people don't know what that is. They assume that that's some benevolent foundation that the US has set up in countries like South Africa, where they hand out money for all sorts of good causes like antiretrovirals and, you know, community initiatives and things that are meant to raise people out of poverty. So let's first talk about what those effects might be, and second of all, what USAID is.
Well, the effects for South Africa could be catastrophic, especially in the healthcare sector. If you're going to try NHI and take state control of the health sector, it's not going to be very helpful to lose $400 million a year in annual funding, which is what flows into South Africa through USAID for healthcare, primarily for HIV AIDS, but not exclusively, also for many other issues, neonatal issues and things like that. That money will disappear in the next fiscal year if Trump sticks to his promise he just made this evening. And that's going to be catastrophic because the South African government can't make up that 4 billion or 5 billion rand. Where's that going to come from? And so that's going to put a crimp in this plan to do NHI. It's just, I think it's scuppered NHI. It was already on the ropes. And I think Discovery will come out screaming loudly. And they're probably the most influential player in this marketplace. So that's the first part. The second part, what is USAID? USAID is the United States Agency for International Development. It was built decades ago to deliver foreign assistance. And unfortunately, in the early days, they did some great work across Africa, building roads and clinics and schools and hospitals, things like that. But they gave money to governments. And by the 1970s and 80s, we realized that a lot of that money was simply being stolen and misused and misappropriated for dictators and corrupt governments across the continent and around the world, but especially in Africa. So they shifted to a model that's more based on using third parties. So most of the money that comes to South Africa never goes to the government of South Africa. So if you're worried about the ANC stealing it, they can't get their hands on it. But what it does do is it allows South Africa's government to not pick up the cost, the full cost, and then they take credit for things. So for instance, no pharmaceutical companies in South Africa developed antiretrovirals. Those are developed at tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars research costs and testing by US pharmaceuticals by and large. So we bore the cost of that. And then we send subsidized rates of these drugs to South Africa to keep 7 million, 8 million South Africans alive. Now, not all of them are antiretrovirals. So this could have a devastating impact. The ANC claims that they spend all the money on HIV today. Well, they spent a lot of money, but they refused to spend money 20 years ago. And if it wasn't for the United States pouring money in, $8.1 billion, Gareth, 150 billion Rand in HIV assistance alone since 2003. 22 years, that's 150 billion Rand that the South African government didn't have to spend for counseling and testing, for antiretrovirals, for care, for nevirapine, for all these different things. And that is a burden that the South African taxpayers can have to pick up. And frankly, the money isn't there. So this is disastrous. I don't think it's going to come to that. I think that we'll get a solution. And I have a solution for you if you're ready for it.
Go on. Let's hear it. Let's get straight to that.
Right.
People don't want more bad news first thing on a Monday morning. And by the way, thanks for staying up late for us to talk us through this. I'll get to something else I want to ask you about, but give us the solution.
All right, here's the solution. And this astounds me that South Africans don't know their constitution better. But I understand it's like 78 pages long, whereas our constitution is the most, as Trump would say, it's the most beautiful document in the world. You know, it's just a short, concise.
It's so beautiful. Yeah.
Exactly. It is so beautiful. But our constitution is beautiful. And the South African constitution fairly is modeled
It's beautiful
off of ours.
Too. Yeah,
it is. The South African constitution is beautiful, but it's very liberal. And that's nothing bad with that. But Section 80 of the South African constitution allows for a challenge to laws. You have 30 days from the date the president signs an act into law.
Right.
To get one third of the parliament to send a letter to the constitutional court to review this. Now, the constitutional court, upon receiving that letter, can put a stay on the law, freeze it, not allow it to be enacted until it decides on the constitutionality of it. I've already gone through the numbers. The parties that say they oppose it, now I have to add the Patriotic Alliance and Gate McKenzie because his 9 votes come over. So with his 9 votes, that means there are 128 members of parliament in the DA, the Freedom Front Plus, which says they're going to lead this initiative, Action SA, which is not in a coalition but is against this, and then also the PA. That's 128. You need 132. So they need to go to Bosa, Musi Maimane, if he's still bumhurt about the DA, maybe get him to come over with his 2 members. And I don't know about General Bantu Holomisa, who's a personal friend of mine, and I would hope that he would have reason would prevail. If he brought his 2 members over, that's 133 or 132, 133, something like that. That gets you there. But even without that, MK and EFF are also angry about it because it doesn't go far enough. They want to confiscate it and give it to the state. So that's 58 votes with MK and 39 with the EFF. So together, you put all those together, you wind up with about 230 votes in parliament.
That's enough. Yeah.
That's a pretty strong message. Yeah, but you could get to 133. That's all you need. And this should go. You must, South Africa, right now, South Africa, Mzansi, Azania, get off your bum and contact your local politician in your metro.
People don't know who
send them WhatsApp.
People don't know who their local politicians are, and they're so lazy.
It's
they're
all
only,
online.
All we do, Chris, is every 4 years we get to, we're going to go and vote, and then we complain. We think that that's going to solve all our problems if the right party gets in, and it won't if the wrong party gets in. I agree with you. We've all got to put pressure on our MPs. We've got to also find ways in civil society, like we were talking about before I put you on, to deal with this government and their rapaciousness. It just seems like their desire to get their hands into all of our pockets as citizens is just, it's unending. All right. Leave South Africa alone for a second. I want to ask you what you think of Justin Trudeau kind of being a little combative. And I mean, I say that because beta males like him are very seldom able to be combative and aggressive, but he stood up and we're going to give you 25% tariff right back, Mr. Trump. Pew, 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 pew. So what do we think is going on there? And how do you think this relationship between America and Canada is changing? We'll leave Mexico out for the moment, but I thought it was pretty funny because Canada has imposed tariffs on American goods for years already, and America's just done nothing. It's like sat idly by. Now, suddenly, when America decides to enforce what they, you know, the American people have given a mandate to the president to sort out all of this stuff, now suddenly Canada's going to like go to war with America on trade. What do you think this is all about?
Well, I think it's all about woke policies in Canada, their abuse of the truckers a few years ago. Our politicians who are now in charge haven't forgotten. That was a violation of the Canadian Basic Charter of Rights, which ironically was brought into existence by Pierre Trudeau, little Juicy Trudeau's father. And the guy first got a violation.
Maybe his father, but you know.
I know, Castro. Okay, whatever. But he does look remarkably like Fidel. But anyway. But the point here is that Trudeau is the first person to violate. He used terrorism laws to stop lawful protest that was annoying and disruptive, but it was lawful by the truckers destroying their lives. Unbelievable what's happened in Canada. So our politicians haven't forgotten that. Also, Canada is a freeloader. Canada only spends 1.2% of its GDP on national defense. They're part of the North American Air Defense System. They're freeloaders. I mean, honestly, they're getting a free ride. They're worse than most countries. Yeah,
you are paying more for Canada's national security than Justin Trudeau is as prime minister. You, Chris White.
Correct. probably. I'm not that wealthy, but yeah. So probably. But 1.2%. A decade ago, Canada agreed, when this guy came in, they agreed they would pay 2% of their GDP towards national defense. Mm-hmm. They're not doing it. We spend 3.5% of our GDP, and they get a free ride. So it's a whole lot of stuff going on. Trump is saying it's about fentanyl and it's about the illegal immigrants. And that's true. I've been warning people for decades about the northern border and being ignored. But now people are paying attention to the northern border. But that's a real problem because Canada's not put a good faith effort forward there. So it is about that. But Trump also kind of alluded to something recently, saying that Canada's taking us for suckers with trade. And that's a fair point. Canadian national tax rate is only 15%.
How do you see this ending? Do you see Justin Trudeau stepping down and getting out of the way and kind of backing off of this? Or do you see it being like a game of one-upmanship where, I don't know, Justin thinks he can compete? I mean, it'll be funny to watch, right?
Well, I don't think it's going to be a chance of one-upmanship. Canada doesn't have a lot of ammunition or arrows in its quiver here. Their relationship with the United States is more important to them than it is to us. It's important to us, and we're really good neighbors. But I know you're laughing, but it's true. I mean, so what are we going to do? Stop buying maple syrup? We're also the world's second largest producer of maple syrup. We'll grow our own maple syrup. And I'll tell you what, I'm a beekeeper, so I encourage people to buy American-produced honey.
I saw
go buy honey.
I saw Chuck Schumer, the Democrat leader in the Senate. He stood up with a Corona beer and an avocado. And he's like, well, if we put in these tariffs against Mexico, we won't have any beer or any avocados. I'm like, really? Corona's that's terrible beer in any case.
Yeah, that's not beer. That's what we call bottled urine. Sorry, I'm a bit of a beer snob. I only drink beer brewed by the Reinheitsgebot. So in Southern Africa, it's only Vintoke Lager. But anyway, Canada has, look, they're going to hurt Canadians more than hurt Americans. So here's the three impacts of tariffs that people don't discuss. And Pumzile Van Dam was on Twitter earlier today saying Americans don't get tariffs. And I had to respond to her and saying that you're missing the point entirely. It's about us losing our industrial base and companies taking advantage of our marketplace, coming in here with low or no tariffs, producing goods that were produced in America overseas, and we're getting the stiff. And so Trump wants to bring that back, and that's why he's doing it. That's a big part of it. But anyway, so the three things with tariffs. Number one, companies will ship. So Canada sends $100 worth of maple syrup to the U.S. tomorrow. Well, $25, my friend, $125. Well, the guy delivering at the border is going to go, nope, and take it back to the factory, and they're not going to get a sale. Or they're going to pay the $25 and try to pass it on the consumer. But if I can get honey cheaper than I can get Canadian maple syrup, I'm going to buy honey. I'm not going to buy Canadian maple syrup. So I'll seek a market alternative. That's going to make them too pricey. And U.S. manufacturers will gain. Those who sell maple syrup from New England will have more maple syrup available to sell because we can produce more, and they'll profit and gain market share. That's the second option. And the third option, and that's tough with the 25% tariff, but the Chinese 10% is a lot easier. They'll eat the difference. And it's the same with AGOA. If the U.S. suspends South Africa from AGOA, wine producers of Western Cape like Goed Constantia and all the others will probably just eat the 2% loss because they'll just have to pay 2% tax to get in the marketplace and not raise the prices so they don't lose market share. So consumers can ultimately pay it, but I'll tell you who's going to pay the price. Canadians are going to pay for this badly. This is arrogance by leftists who think they understand macroeconomics and couldn't find their way out of a economics 101 class at undergraduate level. Trust me, they don't know what they're talking about. They are going to suffer. I think the end result of this is going to be, we already know Trudeau's resigning. He's just a coward. He's like Angela Merkel. I'll resign in 3 years. What the heck is that? Now he's going to resign when they have a replacement for him. I have a replacement for him. I can replace the leader of the Liberal Party in Canada tonight. I have a doorknob. It's more competent than Juicy Trudeau. So let's go with that.
Okay. And also, I think what you've just said about kind of leftists in government and how they don't understand macroeconomics is so true. But wait and see how the usual candidates in the media as well, and your left-wing media in America and our mainstream media here in South Africa, they're all already lining up behind the Trump is bad and mean, and this is unfair and unkind, and why would he do this? And he must be a terrible, terrible, mean, horrible, nasty orange man, because that's kind of been their hymnal for the last, 8 years? And they don't have any new ideas, and they don't understand macroeconomics, and they don't want to understand macroeconomics. They want their narrative to work, and they'll keep trying. So I'm just going to warn everybody, you're going to read a lot of bullshit in the headlines in the next couple of weeks. And yes, there is going to be some economic pain here or there, but it takes someone who's actually got the balls to move things in a certain direction in order for things to happen. So whether you like it or not, this guy's got balls. He's making things happen. And all these ballless, gormless people all over the rest of the world who've just been accepting the situation as it is are going to be bulldozed the hell out of the way.
Well, Gareth, I don't know how much time we have left, how long you're going to have me on. But
2 minutes.
I do want to get this across. 2 minutes. So I want to get this across before we go. Here's the bottom line. South Africa is a sovereign state. The ANC can do what they want, and that's their prerogative. But we're under no obligation when you ship arms to Russia, when they're sanctioned, mm-hmm. when you vote against denouncing Russia's invasion of Ukraine,
right.
when you slap 75% tariffs on our poultry products, when you treat us like crap. We're under no obligation to give you generous duty-free access to our marketplace for 5,600 goods and services mm-hmm. that allow your manufacturers to produce hundreds of thousands of jobs in South Africa. We have no obligation because there's no reciprocity. We don't get duty-free entry in your market. We're not asking for it. We're just asking you to respect property rights and other things. So we're under no obligation to do that. We're under no obligation to give you $500 million a year and assistance that you're too lazy or unwilling to provide to your own people.
Right.
That is not our obligation. And we are under no obligation to sponsor loans from the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the African Development Bank, and others on your behalf. You're on your own. You do what you want. There's no neocolonialism. You're complaining about, you know, we're racist, we're imperialist, vaccine apartheid. What a crock that was. We gave you $711 million to produce vaccine at Aspen Pharmacare, and not one jab has been produced yet. Not one jab 3 years ago. So I'm tired of the nonsense. And I think a lot of people in DC are. And I warned South Africa's government, but they're not listening. You know what? You reap what you sow. And there's a new sheriff in town. It's time to galvanize South Africa. Get out there. Inundate your local municipal councilors. Inundate your political parties. Go march in the streets. Get a permit. Go to parliament. Do everything you can. You got 20 days left to change the course. And if it gets changed and this gets rescinded and declared unconstitutional, Trump will back down. I'm pretty sure he'll do that. That's what I have to say on the matter. Thanks, Gareth.
So we have choices to make. Yeah, there he is. Fuck around and find out, right? So there we go. Sorry, Leanne. I think you passed out a little bit during that.
Jeez.
But there we go. Chris Wyatt on fire first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
Don't say you don't get information from us and we just talk nonsense about celebrities with big tits. We do that too.
Yeah, we do that too.
All right. We've got some sport with James coming up in a short while. But first, it is time for our appointment with the shrink. That's fine. We can wait for the shrink. He waits for us. Actually, he waits for nobody. Our shrink. That's true. All right. So we'll get to Dr. Hanan in just a moment or two. We do have some sport with James later on. Rob Hersov will be joining us from Cape Town, where he's also been all over the place in the last couple of days, talking about everything that we've already discussed with Chris Wyatt and a whole lot more. So you know what? A lot of people really don't like Rob because I think he's one of those people who actually stands up and says what he thinks. And sometimes he's wrong, like you're wrong or I'm wrong. But the people who really don't like him, I don't know what they want. Do they want him to shut up and mind his own business? Do they want him to not exercise his right to freedom of speech? I don't get it. I think the more the merrier. There are lots of people online who I don't want to listen to. I think there are a lot of bullshit artists on X.
Yeah.
People who've made a living out of talking absolute heaps of steaming nonsense. But you got to let them, right? We live in a country where you're able to express yourself. So for all the faults that we have in South Africa, and we've covered a lot of those in the first hour this morning, a lot of the problems that we have, this is one thing that I honestly believe is that we have one of the most free speech rich constitutions, situations, circumstances available to anyone. You could say whatever you want about the president and he can't do a damn thing about you. He can't. I mean, he can try, and if he were a little more, if he had more of a spine, maybe he would. But he's actually not interfering in free speech. We have volumes of opinion that erupt every other day on Twitter and everywhere else, by the way. And that's a good thing. So for all the problems we have, that's one thing that you can cling to. And believe me, the country that gets to speak openly the most, that encourages and allows the most free expression, will ultimately become a better country. So it's not all doom and gloom. That is one thing that we can be very proud of.
Like a relationship, being able to be honest in a relationship.
Don't they say that communication makes
everything?
Yeah, communication in a marriage is everything.
Yeah.
So yeah, there we go. And we're not just talking about marriages, but any kind of relationship, friendship, and you know, parent-child, whatever it might
man,
be.
Man-dog, you know,
man-dog. Hey, by the way, I saw this just quickly before we get to Dr. Anand. I think this is pretty hilarious. Apparently, people who have dogs, and I know you have cats, so I thought of you when I saw this.
I've had dogs.
Okay, yeah, I know you, and you don't dislike dogs, right?
No, I love them.
Yeah. So here's something that I thought was quite fun. Apparently, people who have dogs are likely to be able to fight dementia better than people who don't have dogs. So I don't know whether that's true or not. I don't know whether it applies to everybody.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's only dogs. It may be cats too. I think it's pets in general. I've read many studies on that.
Dog ownership reduces the risk of dementia by 40%.
Yeah.
While cats make no difference.
Are you being serious?
I'm serious. So that's what it says. So this is from a study by the Tokyo Metropolitan Institute for Geriatrics and Gerontology. You know them. You've worked with them a lot.
All the time. Yeah. Good friends of mine.
They found that owning a dog can reduce the risk of dementia by... I can't remember.
You were talking about the risk of dementia.
What was that, dear? What was I talking about just a moment ago? So if you have a dog, less chance of dementia, apparently, according to these guys. You have a cat, no difference.
That's very strange. I know that it can
I'll tell you why. It's because you walk dogs. The dog is more perhaps of a companion than a cat is, even though people have companion cats. And of course, I know people who, you know, the cats are their life. And routine care helps stimulate cognitive function, reinforcing the connection between an active lifestyle and brain health. The findings emphasize the potential pet ownership, particularly dogs, and promoting overall well-being and reducing the likelihood of cognitive decline. So get a dog, Leanne.
Get a dog.
Or else you're going to go fucking dilly.
Gotta get another dog.
All right, let's get to our Dr. Hanan appointment. I'm so sorry, Doc. We're a little late for our appointment. Can we sit down on the sofa in your office and start?
Definitely. How's your week and how does it make you feel?
I'm so glad you asked. All right, let's get going straight away. So let's just talk about motivation because we're starting a new year. And I know that many people, there's no lack of motivation in me. I list things, I've got goals, I've got timelines, I've got deadlines, all of that shit. And I'm maybe a bit of an outlier here and not always in a good way. We discussed last week how, you know, there are people who they just never feel like they're doing enough. They always feel like they're being lazy, even if they are doing a lot. And you kind of punish yourself and life can become an absolute hell if you are like that. But there's so many people who just listening to us this morning, they must be thinking, oh, for God's sake, can you guys just calm it down? Just slow down. Just stop it. I'm not motivated. I don't want to get up this morning. I feel like I've got very little that I really am excited about doing this week. And it's a new month, blah, blah, blah. Shove it up your ass. They're not that interested in this stuff. What can we do to help people who are seriously stuck in terms of motivation? Because there's no shortage of these books by motivational speakers and experts. There's no shortage of talks online. There's no shortage of charlatans out there who will invite you to some course and fill your head with all kinds of fun stuff and light shows and entertainment. And then you walk out of there and you're stuck back where you were.
Right. So motivation is one of my favorite things to discuss because so many people get it wrong. Motivation is this drive and need to achieve a particular goal, or a drive and a need to avoid a specific level of pain. So it's moving towards the carrot and moving away from the stick. And we all want motivation.
Yes.
Because we feel it. We are motivated to eat. Yes. We are motivated to fall in love. We are motivated for intimacy. We are motivated for, you know, any form of addiction or anything that gives us immediate gratification. So we know that that feeling is nice. It's nice to be motivated to go on a date, and it's nice to be motivated to have your favorite meal. And it's nice to be motivated to connect to somebody that you really, really, really love. So we think that that kind of feeling needs to translate to the gym, and need to translate to buying a house, or need to translate to working really hard, or need to translate to every single minute of every single day in every relationship. And the reality of that's not true. You don't need to always be driven to do things that are difficult, because that's not what life offers you. So life sometimes rewards you with a certain level of drive towards attaining something that you really want. Mm. But sometimes life says to you, listen, I'm not going to give you that sense of drive to go to the gym, but I need you to go to the gym anyway. And it is your responsibility to drive yourself, irrespective of your level of motivation, to do the things that you don't necessarily want or are driven to do, but rather things that you need to do because you are an adult. So the difference between successful and unsuccessful people is that we all have these high and low levels of motivation, and they come up at random times. The difference between successful and unsuccessful is successful people respond to life irrespective of how they feel. Unsuccessful people get driven by their feelings. So when they feel like doing something, then they do it. And then when they don't feel like doing something, they don't do it. Think about a New Year resolution when it comes to the gym. How many people have set up the, you know, the goal of I'm definitely taking care of my body this year.
Yeah.
And January 5th comes along and suddenly, whatever, I'll start in February. Or
right.
Before you know it, December comes and you don't do it. So you want to get to a position where irrespective of how you feel, and we're going to talk about, I'd like to share with you some strategies of how to get there. But ideally, you want to drive your behavior irrespective of whether you feel like it or don't feel like it. Hence, whether I feel like going to the gym or don't feel like going to the gym, I'm going to go to the gym.
Well, it's easier said than done. So we have to talk about those two kinds of people. I think we can rest assured that the people who don't need the motivation, who are already doing this stuff, are okay. But again, do you think that the people who aren't in that position, the people who struggle to motivate themselves, who feel like they need a little bit of help, do you think that there's any way for them to change that permanently? Or is it a helpless situation? Yes. I mean, we don't want to give people zero hope out there.
No, I don't believe in it. And I'm yet to see somebody that doesn't have the correct tools that doesn't perform at least better from their current baseline position. So here's something that I want people to really understand. So we spoke about unsuccessful people who let their emotions drive their behavior. So think of a car. Unsuccessful people allow the emotion to be in the driver's seat and the behavior in the back seat. So if I feel like doing it, I'm going to do it. And if I don't feel like doing it, I don't do it. Some people, and this doesn't work either, and I'll tell you in a minute why, some people have the behavior in the driver's seat and the emotions in the back. So we call it grit. You know, kind of it's a new buzzword, grit. You've got to grit it out. And the reason why that doesn't work is because you only have so much grit in your system. And grit is like, you wake up on a Saturday and you're like, well, I promise myself to go to the gym. I promise myself to do X, Y, and Z. And now I'm going to just force myself to do it. Well, that can't last. It just doesn't last. We'd only have so much grit, and eventually that runs dry. Because grit is filled by sleep, and it fills by, you know, life circumstances, and it gets depleted by those things as well, which are random.
Absolutely.
The best solution, listen to this, and this is important for everybody, and press replay on this. Here's the formula that I live by. This is my philosophy that I live by and the philosophy that I teach.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the formula. Blueprint or framework plus discipline equals result. Blueprint plus discipline equals result. People think result is based on discipline, which is correct, but nobody will tell you how discipline is built. The precursor for discipline is having the correct framework. If you don't have a manual, a framework, a blueprint, a system that drives the discipline, then you can't be disciplined. So imagine building a house with a blueprint. Imagine building a house without a blueprint. Imagine running a project with a plan. Imagine running a project without a plan. It's the planning that is responsible for driving the behavior. So therefore, instead of having the behavior in the driving seat, what you want to do is you want to create a blueprint that drives the behavior that ultimately drives the emotion. The blueprint also does something else that's quite magical. So imagine two people that need to go to the gym. Mm-hmm. Person one has a blueprint. Monday, I'm going to go to a personal trainer. I paid them 6 weeks in advance. I'm going between 4:30 and 5. Tuesday, I've got a friend coming up. They've got a blueprint. Person B, they're just going to wing it. If they both wake up on Monday morning and both don't feel like going to the gym, they're not motivated to go to the gym, the only one that's going is the one with a blueprint. The blueprint drives behavior irrespective of how it feels. So I'll just finish off by saying one more thing. Therefore, the difference between successful and unsuccessful people, listen to this. Unsuccessful people trust themselves to behave because they have to. Unsuccessful people trust themselves to behave. So, of course, I'm going to go to the gym on Monday. I have to.
Yeah.
Successful people don't trust themselves. Successful people are led and are forced by the blueprint to behave whether they feel like it or not. Successful people know that now I feel like going to the gym, but I have no idea what I will feel like on Monday, and therefore I can't trust myself in driving myself to the gym on Monday. I got to create a blueprint that forces me to behave whether I feel like it or not. I'm no longer going to be in the driver's seat. The framework, the blueprint, the system is going to drive me.
It's actually quite a relief to feel like you can almost hand over that control to something else or someone else and almost automate your life. But when it comes down to the, and we don't obviously don't have time for it, but when it comes down to the practicality of putting together this blueprint, what sort of careered person would be able to assist with something like that? If you said, these are the things I want to achieve, let's work on a blueprint together.
So if we had to double click on what a blueprint ultimately means, blueprint is divided into three parts. It's a vision, and the word that you used, Gareth, earlier, goal and strategy. Vision is ultimately my why. Goal is what do I want? And strategy is how do I get what I want? So why am I doing it? What do I want and how do I get what I want? And then you follow the strategy in order to achieve a goal, in order to achieve the vision, which is your result. So ultimately, if you want to create a blueprint, it depends on which area of your life. Remember how many times on the show we discussed the anchors. So career, financial security, family, friends, romantic, diet, exercise, and sleep. And lean on professionals in those areas, in those fields,
right,
that will help guide you through the blueprint.
All right, I love it. And by the way, there's this huge bush of chest hair that's just suddenly appeared on you there. I what that is.
Ah, that's great. That is great.
All right, Dr. Hanan. Listen, it's always good to see you and have an excellent week. We'll catch up with you next Monday. Hopefully, lots of people be motivated between then and now. And if you're not, you know, let your life go to shit. It's not my problem. I don't care. Cheers.
All right, guys, bye.
All right, that's all we got for this hour. But don't go away, because the extremely controversial and very rich Rob Hirsov will be with us in the next hour to talk about all kinds of interesting shit. And I know it's going to be the kind of stuff that will be shared all over social media afterwards, because, you know, every time you have Rob on, nothing is just bland and middle of the road. So all of that and more on the way. Plus, Leanne has got some stuff for us as well. We have some fun. She wants to tell us, for example, about a woman who commented, "Hey guys," on her own wanted poster and was then found hiding in a pile of toys. I kid you not, these are the kinds of stupid things that are going on all around you. So if you're feeling good or you're feeling horrible this morning, this is the place to be. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in a minute.